his kids had won it. Bobby Thompson had done it, and Yogi read the comics all the while. Rock and roll was being born, marijuana we would scorn. So down on the corner, the national pastime went on trial. We're talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella. Talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller. The scooter, the barber and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque. Especially Willie, Mickey and the Duke. Well, Casey was winning, Hank Aaron was beginning. One Robbie going out, one coming in. Kiner and Midget Goodell, the Thumper and Mel Parnell. And Ike was the only one winning down in Washington. I'm talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella. Talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller. The scooter, the barber and the duke. They know them all from Boston to Dubuque. Especially Willie, Mickey and the Duke. Well, he swore he was the Oklahoma kid. And Cookie played hooky to go and see the Duke. And me, I always love Willie May.
Oh. Good evening and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. And tonight we indeed will be talking baseball. 2013 was quite a season, capped off by the World Series ending last night. We congratulate the Boston Red Sox. And our special guest tonight is Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs media relations manager and broadcaster John Schaefer. Hello, John.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Okay. Before I get to the rest of the introductions, what I'd like to do is get your take on this World Series. Six games the Red Sox took to win it.
I thought it was an excellent World Series, and I think I grew up a Phillies fan. I've always loved Phillies baseball, but I was rooting for Boston this past week. I think everything that's happened in Boston the past year, you can't help but kind of rally around something that's even bigger than baseball. And Red Sox baseball is bigger than baseball in Boston, and to see the way the season ends in Boston is quite a finish.
Quite a finish it is, and we'll be hoping that something like that may happen at Coca-Cola Park in the not-too-distant future. I want to continue. We're going to be talking baseball, mainly Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, and that was another very competitive season for the Iron Pigs, and we're going to want to take a look back at that. They had a great season in 2011, a competitive season in 2012, and 2013 competitive as well. I want to talk about that season and the coming season in 2014, and we also want to talk about some aspects of the organization that listeners may not be familiar with, like Iron Pigs Charities. That being said, I also want to welcome John Pierce, who is a regular host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. I want to thank John for letting me sit in his chair tonight.
Steve, it's always a pleasure.
And number A1, Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs fan, Rosalie Viscomo, is also with us. Hi, Rosalie.
Good evening, Steve. I hope that doesn't get disputed, but at least in the studio, maybe I may be classified as that.
As number one. Oh, okay. We'll go that far. One of the things I'd like to do is, in talking about 2013, is give our listeners a sample of what went on in 2013. This is the last weekend of the season, and it pretty well, it's the culmination of the season, but it also is kind of descriptive of what went on all throughout the year. I'm going to let you listen to that and talk to John Schaefer about it.
Runner off of third, pitch is swung on, ripped down the right field line. Fair, this is trouble. Back goes Medchill by the corner. It lands in fair. A fair ball. Down from third to score is Castro. Minimard is huge as the Iron Pigs keep their season alive. A walk-off shot down the right field line, same spot where Galvis got one earlier this week, and they mob Martinez behind the mound. Everybody piling up on Minimart, a 5-9 hero tonight on the walk-off winner. Pigs fly, pigs fly, pigs fly to a 5-4 walk-off victory here tonight.
Okay. Did you hear it, John Schaefer?
I know the play. Yeah, I know the play. It was Michael Martinez with the
walk-off. And that was Matt Provins.
Yeah, Matt Provins on the call. It was the culmination of the season because you're right. We had a lot of walk-off hits in 2013. I thought the team overperformed under Dave Brundage with all the moves, everyone going up to Philadelphia, with the injuries the Phillies had, with the age of the Phillies, just the injuries the Iron Pigs had to it. You know, after that game, they were 72-69, still mathematically alive with 3 days to play. They finished 72-72. But for me, if you took the 6 years of teams and said what team maybe, you know, really all said and done, you know, performed better than a lot of people thought they would have performed, it was probably the 2013 team by the end of the season, just because of all the shakeup in the major leagues and all the promotions, the Phillies roster really changing over entirely over the course of the year. So I thought 72 wins was a good year.
At the beginning of the season, Dave Brundage took over at the helm, replacing Ryan Sandberg, who at the time went up to the Phillies to become third base coach. You're talking about them overperforming, but what were your expectations at the beginning of the season when Brundy took over?
I was familiar with him from his time as a manager in the Atlanta farm system. He was a manager of the Gwinnett Braves for a number of years. He managed a championship team in Richmond. Our first year in the International League, Richmond was still in the league in 2008, and Richmond had won the International League in 2007. So I knew he was a winning manager. I knew he came from a good system like Atlanta. Atlanta has so many winning teams, very good farm system historically the last 20 years. We expected to win. We really did. I think he did as well. He's an aggressive manager like Ryan Sandberg. He'd rather play for an extra base. He wants guys to hustle and play hard. You know, he's an old school guy. You know, he's an old school guy. Both of those guys are actually from the Pacific Northwest. Sandberg and Brundage both were drafted by the Phillies. Both were outstanding prep players in high school, not just baseball, but football as well. So he was in a similar mold than Sandberg was.
And Sandberg was involved in perhaps the Phillies' worst trade of all time, John.
Yeah, that's right.
Possibly. Whom did the Phillies get for Sandberg?
Well, the Sandberg deal was also a deal. I'm trying to think the edge of that deal. Larry Bowe was in that deal. But you're talking about Sandberg had only played 13 games for the Phillies.
Is that right?
The year prior as a September call-up, and then, of course, became a Hall of Fame player. So,
for the Chicago Cubs.
For the Chicago Cubs,
had to get that
absolutely.
In, Steve.
Tell me, John Pierce, are you somehow interested in the Chicago Cubs?
I'll tell you, I can count the number of times they've been to the World Series in the last 100 years. And it's a low number.
Only on one hand, right?
That's right.
Or less than that.
That's right.
You mentioned that he's an aggressive manager like Brundage was an aggressive manager like Ron Sandberg. Any other similarities or differences that you are aware of between the two of them in terms of managing at AAA?
I think when it comes strictly to managing, it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult to really put a finger on a managerial style because a lot of it is predicated on the team that you have on the field. So you might be known as an aggressive manager, but if your team isn't fast, you're not going to just run. So the team has to play to your strengths as a manager as well. When I think about last year's team, it was a good speed team. You know, I think a good young speed, middle infielders, outfielders, so they could take advantage of their speed a little bit. But again, for me, a manager plays out. You really get a feel for a manager over a lengthy period of time. When I think about major league managers, I think about the clubs that they manage. How do they make those teams better? You know, when I think about Charlie Manuel as a manager, I think about him playing to the strengths of the Phillies offense over the course of 5 or 10 years, not wanting to run into outs, waiting for a 2 or 3 run inning. So sometimes it's tough. Charlie Manuel would not have been the same manager in Cleveland in the 2000s as he was in Philadelphia in the 2000s. But, it's about playing to your strengths, and I think both Sandberg and Brundage have been able to do that.
You talked about all the turnover that took place during the course of the year. The count that I received, that I looked at, was that some 58 different players played for the Iron Pigs during the course of the season. And this team was still competing for a playoff spot until the last weekend.
Yeah.
What 2 or 3... things can you tell us about them that really kept them in there for that long?
I think that this team really had a flair for the same as 2012. Really, there were a lot of comfort behind victories. This was another one of those teams where you could get them down 2-0, 3-1, 4-2, and they would have fight in them. They'd come back. Over 30 come from behind victories last year, which is a very good number for a team that finished at 500. I thought, all told, the bullpen pitching was outstanding, despite the fact that a lot of guys ended up going up to the Phillies. Bullpen was the strength probably for a third consecutive year. And then, you know, they had good individual players. When you think about a Cody Ashe and what he did, you think about a Darren Ruff and what he was capable of doing. You think about, you know, a lot of guys that really can play well at AAA, Cesar Hernandez, Michael Martinez. I thought it was a really good AAA lineup to begin the year. And again, a lot of those guys ended up being in the major league. So I think we were right to say it was a good AAA lineup at the beginning of the year. By the end of the year, you had a lot of guys that had even started the year in single A and double A, you know, playing as regulars in the Lehigh Valley.
Well, Steve, I think one of the exciting things about having a AAA ball club in the Lehigh Valley is that you get to see these players then at the major league level. Sometimes a week after you've seen them here in person at Coca-Cola Park, right, Rosie?
Exactly, and it's expanded my horizon, because being an Iron Pigs fan only, people say, who's your team? I say, the Iron Pigs. No, who's your baseball team? I said, the Iron Pigs. So with having them going up to Philadelphia, I had to start watching all those Phillies games because those guys were there now. So.
Is it true that before the Iron Pigs came to the Lehigh Valley, you were not a baseball fan?
I was not a baseball fan before 2008.
Eureka year in 2008.
Now I'm even watching any baseball. For instance, I had to watch the entire World Series, and last night, staying awake to watch mm-hmm. that game, because for me, winter begins today. No baseball.
I fell asleep. Mm-hmm. But Rosalie apparently stays up till the bitter end, no matter what. Rosalie, as a fan, did you notice anything different in 2013 than in previous years?
Not really. It's the same. It's always exciting, great giveaways, and the great staff, great seats. What can I say? It was a very good year.
Very friendly staff at Coca-Cola Park. It's
most
really
definitely.
Fun to go out there. Yes.
Yes.
From an announcer's viewpoint, how difficult is it to keep up with all of the changes that take place sometimes on a daily basis, mm-hmm. up and down? And
yeah, it can be. I think you'd probably prefer to have a stagnant roster. And again, at the major leagues, when you have some really good teams, you think about the Phillies the last decade, or the Yankees, or the Red Sox, you have a core of players. You know, the New York Yankees have had a core of players for a decade plus, where you got 10 or 12 or 15 names that you would expect to be on that roster.
And they're all old now.
Yeah, exactly. And that roster will change over. In the minor leagues, you're not going to get that. I mean, there's going to be changes, inevitably. It's a good thing when there's changes. The opportunity is to go on to the next level. And, of course, here, the next level is the major leagues. So it can be difficult. But it's part of the business, too. I mean, you get used to it. You see new players each and every day. You see visiting teams each and every day that are new. And that's just kind of what we do. We prepare for the game that night.
It's kind of exciting to see new players. Mm-hmm.
Because every player is a storyline, and every night has its own storyline. So every circumstance is unique in baseball. It could be a random Tuesday night. Lehigh Valley could be playing Louisville, and Louisville's starting pitcher could have pitched before for Lehigh Valley, or Lehigh Valley's starter that night might be the big prospect coming up from Double A. It's amazing. You could play 144 times, but each of the games has something unique to it, and that's what I like about baseball. I've called over 1,000 baseball games, but I could be sitting there and witnessing something that I've never seen, or I've never seen this type of matchup. Wow, we've got this 10-year veteran against this 10-year veteran. So every night presents kind of a unique situation, a unique opportunity to tell a story, and every night presents the opportunity for something crazy to happen, like a no-hitter or a perfect game or four home runs. Who knows?
I'm amazed when I hear a very seasoned commentator or a play-by-play person say during a game, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
He could have been behind the microphone 20 or 25 years.
Right. So you don't really hear that in some of the other sports. I don't think NBA and think, wow, I've never seen, you know, a 20-point comeback or a 4-point play, or wow, this is wild, or even in National Football League. I mean, what you've never seen might be some remarkable comeback. But in baseball, you've never seen an individual play the thing that happens on the field in that one instance isn't necessarily been emulated in baseball's history prior. You know, you don't get that in the other sports, and that, I think that's what makes it unique.
It's real interesting.
You mentioned Cody Ashe, and I want to talk about him in a little bit more detail, but that it's a good thing he went to the major leagues. As a fan of the Iron Pigs, that it kind of bothered me. And my theory is, at the time Cody Ashe went to the Phillies and Cesar Hernandez, the Iron Pigs were still very much in contention for a playoff spot. And they went up to the Phillies, and the Phillies were not in contention for anything at the time. And it just seems to me that in addition to all the physical skills they need to play baseball, it would have been good for them to get the pressure skills of be competing for a playoff spot. And I think, to me, that was at least as important as the physical skills that they hone when they are in the minor leagues and then move up to the major leagues. So
how do they make those decisions?
Do you have a take on that?
Yeah, I think there's two sides to a coin, and I think that each organization looks at it slightly differently. But one side of the coin says you need at-bats in the minor leagues to succeed in the major leagues, regardless of how good you are, regardless of how big of a prospect you are. There might be an adage, you have to have 1,500 at-bats as a hitter, or you need a couple hundred innings thrown as a pitcher. But there gets a time where everyone forces the hand of someone else. So the better you play, the rules get lessened a little bit each and every time. So you can force the hand of an organization, so to speak, by playing well at the highest minor league level. Cody Ashe was excelling in AAA. The Phillies had an opportunity where they could get him time at third base in the major leagues. So you have a guy that's really peaked at a level. So he's not necessarily improving. He's not necessarily gaining the experience that he'd get in the major leagues in AAA. So let's go get that experience in the major leagues. Of course, it's different when the Phillies are going to the postseason. You're not going to call up a young rookie third baseman and expect him to perform in a playoff chase. But when there's less pressure on and there's an opportunity to play 60 consecutive days, that's when those circumstances will happen. But yeah, it's two sides. I mean, you either say the development is critical or is crucial. I will not risk the development at the expense of, you know, short-term gain. Or it works both ways. That's the amazing thing. You could do it perfectly in the minor leagues, call a guy up at just the right time, and it could be a failure. Or you could force a guy through the levels, and he could stick. There's no guarantee on what makes it the right situation, but there's a number of philosophies on what people think.
Obviously, not many of those philosophies agree with mine, so I'll move on. There were a lot of surprises during the course of the season in terms of personnel for the Iron Pigs. Cody Ashe was one of them. Did you have any particular other surprises? He not only did his hitting start to excel, but his fielding was phenomenal.
I said really from the first couple of games I saw him that he was just, you could tell he was kind of a cut above at third base in the International League in terms of his fielding, in terms of just the quality of his at-bats, the quality of his play. And he wasn't one of these guys that's going to wow you and hit, you know, home runs to left field and right field and run 100 miles an hour. He just did everything well. And when you collectively have every tool, you're a darn good baseball player. And he just was a really good baseball player. You could see it very early on. It was his second full professional season, which is remarkable. Typically, a AAA player would have somewhere between 3 to 5 pro years. So, you know, if you're drafted 18, you're probably around 23 at AAA. If you're drafted at 21, you're probably 24 to 25 at AAA. He was just his second professional season, and he excelled here with the Iron Pigs. And then I thought Cesar Hernandez made a huge jump in his second year with the Iron Pigs. He went from being a guy that was a good AA player in 2012 but was young for the AAA level to an all-star in the International League. And I thought one of the better middle infielders in the IL, and a guy that I think has shown he could be an everyday player in the major leagues.
We had some good pitching from Ethan Martin. We had another surprise in the pitching area with David Buchanan, and yet another surprise with Tyler Cloyd, but that was a different surprise. How do you attribute what happened? He was 12-1 in 2012, and he just didn't seem to have it this year.
I go back to when you succeed at a high level, trying to duplicate that success is very hard to do. And he succeeded at a AAA level, not necessarily the major league level. So to be asked to kind of repeat the level when you've passed it is a tough challenge. He had a new pitching coach in 2013. He threw a lot of cut fastballs in 2012. I'm not sure if he threw as many in 2013. I thought he exceeded. He got better as the year went on. He pitched very well up in the major leagues when he had that opportunity. And really, you look at the job that, you know, Rod Nichols, who he had worked with before, was up with the Phillies. Ray Burris, I thought, did an excellent job. The pitching coach for the Iron Pigs this year, I thought, was outstanding. But there's so many factors. I mean, there's so many factors. Who are you facing? You know, he faced different players, different teams, different moments in 2013 as opposed to 2012. And then the last point is, even great major league pitchers, you know, Roger Clemens in his prime could have a good year followed up by an average year followed up by a great year. So there's a number of controls kind of to the experiment.
Steve, is it time to take a break?
You have another question about the cut fastball.
It's going to be a tease.
We'll tease it.
When we come back from our break.
John Schaefer referred to a cut fastball, and John Pierce has a question.
When we come back from the break, John Schaefer is going to tell us just what a cut fastball is.
Steve Aronson, John Pierce, John Schaefer, and Rosalie Viscomi on Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.
WDIY is pleased to announce the annual members meeting Thursday, November 14th, 7 to 8 p.m. at 301 Broadway in Bethlehem. We'll be electing a member representative to the Lehigh Valley Community Broadcasters Association Board of Directors for a two-year term. The nomination period closes noon Wednesday, November 6. If you'd like to place your name in nomination for this position, please submit your letter of interest and qualifications electronically to info@wdiy.org with member representative in the subject line. For information, 610-694-8100 or wdiy.org.
We're back on Lehigh Valley Discourse with host co-host John Pierce today. He's usually the regular host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs broadcaster John Schaefer and a number one fan, Rosalie Viscomi. Before we get to John's question, John Pierce's question, we talked about surprises and disappointments. Rosalie, did you have any particular surprises or disappointments this year?
There was one disappointment. I was looking forward to seeing Rich Thompson again coming to Coca-Cola Park with Durham, but unfortunately, I think he broke his foot. Yep. And we had just arrived back from vacation, and I said, oh, we're back just in time to see the Durham Iron Pigs, and Rich Thompson will be here. Well, guess what? He was not there. And it was unfortunate also because I was looking forward to the AAA championship game, and I thought, I think Durham's going to be one of the teams in that, and they're going to be there. Durham's going to win. And sure enough, Durham was there, and unfortunately, Rich, I guess, was in the park, but he just was not on the playing field. So
he
that was
couldn't
a little
play the rest of the season.
No, he did not play the rest of the season.
He missed the remainder of the year, yep. Yeah.
All right, now for the big question.
Here it is.
Ready, Steve?
No, I'm ready.
Okay, do you have a drum roll for me? There we go. And, John, what is exactly a cut fastball?
Well, first of all, it's the pitch of choice now across a number of major league organizations. You see a lot of younger pitchers and veteran pitchers throw it. Roy Halladay had a lot of success in the prime of his career throwing it. And it is a fastball. You think fastball, you think throw the ball as hard as you can, but actually it's a fastball that you take a little bit off of by cutting it. So when they say cut, you have a fastball and a slider. Fastball is a straight pitch. Slider has more movement to it. It looks like a fastball. It tails away or down at the end of the pitch. A cut fastball cuts to the glove hand side. It's a fastball with movement. So it's harder than a slider, not as hard as your hardest fastball. And while it appears to be straight, if you're a right-handed pitcher, it actually cuts back towards your glove side. So you couldn't necessarily see this on radio, but if you think envision pitching with your glove, with your right hand, it cuts towards your glove hand.
So
cut fastball.
It cuts to the left.
Exactly.
As it goes over the plate.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But the success comes from the fact that batters, the eye doesn't really pick up the difference between a fastball and a cut fastball. So you're swinging thinking the pitch is straight when in fact it's moving. And when you're able to make contact or not, the contact is lessened. You know, it's not off the sweet spot of the bat, so to speak, because you think it's a straight pitch. It's not. It's got movement to it. Not the same movement as a slider, but movement to it.
Right. And I've heard also commentators talking about how his fastball is moving today, meaning that it's tougher to hit the ball.
No question. And some guys have that and some guys don't. Cut fastball, whatever it is. Some guys, they say their fastball kind of has life to it. It's a flat that you'll hear sometimes, you know, it's a straight 99. You say, well, yeah, but it's still 99. But 99 miles an hour straight is hittable. 99 miles an hour with some life to it, some movement. And sometimes when these pitchers throw, they don't necessarily know exactly where it's ending, but they want some variance in the planes, whether that be up, down, left, right, to fool batters. Because if major league hitters can hit fastballs. So you better be able to either A, throw it hard, or B, throw it with movement.
And when you're calling the game from the radio mm-hmm. booth, can you tell that the pitch is a fastball or a cut fastball?
We like to say we can. on the radio, what I tell you is that it's a cut fastball. Yeah, I mean, you can. Here are the markers for me are radar guns. So I know Tyler Cloyd, let's say, I'm making this up, throws an 89-mile-per-hour fastball. When I see a pitch at 86, his slider is probably 82. So if it's not 89, it's not 82, and he throws a cut fastball, that's his cut fastball. And then the other thing you know from a cut fastball is I can see a fastball from a mile away. A cut fastball will move. And again, if a straight pitch is a fastball always. A straight, quick pitch is a fastball always. So when you see a pitch coming in hard with movement, there's a good chance it's a cut fastball, or it's a slider. But a slider has much larger movement. I mean, fall off the table movement, as they say, where it comes in straight and dives away from a lefty or righty, depending on who's batting.
I always thought a slider was closer to a curveball.
It is. The movement of the pitch is. A curveball will come in with less velocity, typically in what they refer to as a 12-6 motion, so on a clock, more north-south break to a curveball. A slider has more 12-3 break to it. Comes in hard and straight, breaks down and away. Comes in hard and straight, breaks either to 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock.
And I would guess then that the curveball is tougher for the plate umpire to call a strike or ball.
It is because it comes fairly low
toward the knees.
Exactly. And there's a large variance. Are you calling the curveball when it crosses home plate? Are you calling it when it's at the batter? Because the difference between the front of a batter, where it could be at your belt, by the time it gets to the catcher, it could be below the batter's knees. It's interesting. The pitch selection is one of the most interesting parts of baseball. You know, whether it be how to throw what pitch in what instance is baseball, is pitching. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's not throwing 100 miles per hour. There's a difference between throwing and pitching is what really makes people stick at the major league level.
One of the great events of 2013, mm-hmm. after the Iron Pig season anyway, was the championship game, the AAA championship game at Coca-Cola Park between the Omaha Storm Chasers uh-huh. and the the Durham Bulls. And it was really a good game. The Storm Chasers won the game 2-1, and Chris Dwyer of the Storm Chasers had a perfect game going into the seventh inning, so it was quite exciting. But how did all of that unfold? How did the game come to be played at Coca-Cola Park, and what was your own feelings about seeing the game there?
Well, it was a two-year process of the making. They choose the clubs to host based on their success at the gates, financially. There's a number of factors that go into it, but we were pleased to be able to host that game. And then what ended up happening during the game between Durham and Omaha, for me, goes down as one of the best games ever played at Coca-Cola Park. It was an excellent game. You mentioned the pitching. 20 consecutive batters retired by Omaha starter at the onset. I thought he was going to throw a perfect game or a no-hitter. The way he was pitching in the seventh inning, I'd convinced myself that he was not going to allow a hit. And the hit he allowed was just a ground ball through the right side of the infield. You know, it wasn't a hard-hit ball. It was an excellent baseball game. When you think about a championship-level game, first of all, AAA championship, it to some extent, is almost an exhibition because these teams have already won their leagues. You know, they had already won the International League and the Pacific Coast League. It's a one-game showcase. Baseball's not typically played in one-game series. The winner so be it. The loser, so be it. It doesn't judge your season. Durham has still won the International League. That's still the goal of the Iron Pigs at the beginning of the season, is to win the International League. So sometimes in a one-game format, you don't get the best baseball played because, again, it has a little bit of an exhibition feel. But this game, I said it five times during the game just watching it, I said both of these teams really want to win this game. No one wants to lose this game. They don't want the sour taste of losing their last game this season as champions. And it was two excellent baseball teams. I was shocked by the level of play. I was blown away by how good of a game it was.
We were there. It was almost a sellout. They had like 9,600 people, I think, at the game. And it was quite exciting just as a fan to be there and see those Clydesdales sail around the warning track during the course of the game.
You thought it was Christmas time already, didn't you?
It's coming.
Well, if Christmas comes, then baseball is only about 3 months after that. So,
yeah.
Steve's talking about the attendance for that particular game, and the Iron Pigs have had very strong attendance through the years. I think 9,000 plus as an average. Yep. For now, in the minor leagues, do they announce the paid attendance, or do they announce the people who are in the seats for that game?
They announce paid attendance.
So that's tickets sold.
As a fan, I don't like that.
You want to know how many people were there.
That's right.
Yeah.
The other day, there was a game that was played. I think it was an NFL game. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was in Tampa Bay. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And they announced, a couple of commentators on the radio were saying, look, they announced the 65,000 people. There might have been 6,500 people in the stands. So I'd rather get a picture of who actually showed up.
I see your point. I do. I don't know how they decide to do that.
It makes them look better to say it's,
Across all of minor league baseball, that number's a larger number. So,
and I think the major league's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same.
Another thing that happened during the baseball season, not directly affecting the Iron Pigs, was Charlie Manuel of the Phillies getting fired and Ryan Sandberg taking over the job. Do you have a sense of whether that was handled the best way by the Phillies?
You know what? Ruben Amaro's job is to make sure that the Phillies are in the best possible position to win, today and long term. So, I think ultimately you can't fault the decision they made because they made the decision based on the future success of the club. And that's what the decisions always should be made on. It's what makes us the best we're going to be. You could say in 2013, but really in 2014, they had played themselves out of anything in 2013, and they had to look to 2014. I don't think they made the decision recklessly, certainly, though a lot of time went into that decision. And I think also you needed to give Ryan Sandberg that kind of, that just the feel of what this situation would be like with him at the helm prior to spring training 2014. I think there would have been a lot more pressure on Sandberg had he never been a major league manager than having given him now that 60-day window or so. And now the players have a feel for his managerial style. Now the front office has a feel for his managerial style. Remember, he wasn't given the job right away. He was made an interim manager, and he was then awarded the full-time managerial gig. So he was, playing for a job as well. So it's not as if they took the job away from Charlie and gave it to Ryan. They took the job away from Charlie and said, who's going to get this job next? But with the emphasis being on, we need to put ourselves in the best position we can be in 2014. Ruben Amaro would tell you, obviously Charlie Manuel did a ton for the Phillies organization. A lot of Phillies fans would tell you they have a great amount of respect for Charlie Manuel. But I think in the present time, considering the roster currently at hand, it felt like a change was necessary. It did feel like a change was necessary. Now, did it mean in the summer or the winter? Who knows? But it did feel like a change was coming.
In terms of approach, this is basically two questions. Will Ryan Sandberg's approach be different in the majors than it was in the in AAA? And how different will his approach be to Charlie Manuel's approach?
I think it's a good question because what Ryan Sandberg was known for as a minor league manager was keeping everyone fresh. Everyone was on their toes. Very rarely in the Lehigh Valley would Sandberg let a player not appear consecutive days as a position player. That's rare. I mean, in the minor leagues, you could have a guy play once a week. Sandberg was having everyone play three or four times a week. So by keeping everyone fresh, it kept that kind of team unity and team mentality. Everyone here is going to be a reason why we win or lose. it's a little bit more difficult to do in the major leagues because you have to field your best team basically always. You have to put yourself in the best position to win. You don't have to do that in the minor leagues, but I do think you'll probably see more of that where you're seeing more of the roster turn over night in, night out, give guys some breathers. You know, we'll see how that works out in the major leagues. In terms of the difference between Sandberg and Manuel, I don't know. Having, you know, I can't get a feel for it off just the 2 months of the season. I think they're both going to be regarded as player managers. I think the players are going to want to play for both of them. You know, they rallied around Charlie Manuel, but they're going to rally around a Major League Hall of Famer as well. So it might be a different way they kind of get up to play against, you know, Charlie as manager or Ryan as manager, but I think they'll get the same out of the club, which is guys are going to want to play for both these men. If Charlie Manuel gets another job, people are going to want to play for him. He's very highly respected.
Okay, we pretty much did a job on 2013. We're going to move on to 2014 right after this message.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem Southside, presenting D-Generation, An Exaltation of Larks. Written and performed by the Sandglass Theater, this new work is based on stories written collaboratively by Alzheimer's and late-stage dementia patients. Performed by three puppeteers and five puppets, D-Generation takes us into their complex and mysterious world, November 14th through 17th. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
We're back at Lehigh Valley Discourse. Steve Aronson, along with John Pierce and Iron Pigs broadcaster John Schaefer, and number one Iron Pigs fan Rosalie Viscomi.
Steve, before you get into 2014 for the Piggies, I'd like to ask a question about pitchers and their health.
Okay.
We're talking a lot of these days about the health of professional football players, and we hear so much about Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what percentage of major league pitchers have had Tommy John surgery, and can every hard-throwing kid with big league aspirations expect to undergo it at some point? Is it that common?
It's extremely common. It's an excellent question. I don't know the exact percentage, but I know that it's enough to be very significant. You know, more than 20% of pitchers have undergone it. Not 100%, but a sizable number. And what it is, when people talk about Tommy John surgery, which wasn't even correctable until the last 40 years, is a tear of your elbow ligament that is then... Previously, once your elbow is gone, so is your career. It can now be replaced with another ligament, and not only can you come back, you can come back as strong, if not stronger. A lot of people come back throwing harder after Tommy John surgery than they did before. And with that being said, some people think, well, should I get it out of the way now? As a high school pitcher, as a college pitcher, as a young professional pitcher, should I undergo the surgery? Will it build strength in my arm? That I don't personally think, I can't see how that would be warranted, because you're talking about a 12 to 18 month injury. But even, I mean, yeah, a lot of pitchers are going to have it. Most recently, the most notable one is Matt Harvey with the Mets, who's a hard throwing pitcher that is going to undergo or has undergone it.
And typically after the surgery, then the player misses a whole season?
A whole year. It used to be almost 2 years, upwards of 2 years, depending on when you had the surgery. Now it's almost down to an 8-9 month injury, almost like an ACL injury. However, an 8-9 month injury, with the way the baseball calendar works, is a year injury, because even if it's 8 months back, the rehabbing process, even in, you know, you're talking a 4 or 6 week throwing program, somewhere in there, probably beyond that 8 months. So I think the very quick ones are back in 8-9. The average is probably more 10-12 months.
Okay, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we even get to 2014, we have an off season, and John, you have some work that you do during the off season with different sports. Is that mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I do. I try to stay as busy as I can, because broadcasting is really my passion. You know, I love working in sports. I like doing the things that we do around the office with the Iron Pigs, because it's fun and it's unique and it's entertaining. But when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a broadcaster. So I've been fortunate in that regard. But yeah, I do some college football games. We do some stuff on Service Electric. Just did a Moravian game this past weekend.
I was trolling on Saturday afternoon and I came across two familiar voices, John Schaefer and Matt Provost.
Yep. And then I'll do basketball with St. Peter's University, which is in Jersey City, Seton Hall University in South Orange, New Jersey. I do a lot of work with both. I probably will do 50 games in the winter between the two. So I do a lot of driving. I love it. You know, I love baseball, but every sport has its nuances and uniqueness to it. So I love doing all the sports, and it's fun getting the chance of working with Matt, which we just did. I don't work with Matt a ton in the off season, but that's fun too, because I've known Matt now for close to 12 years. He gave my first job in baseball in 2002. You know, I'm 33, so I've known Matt over a third of my life. So, and he's a great friend. So to work with Matt is a thrill.
Oh, that's so great to hear two guys who really are kind of best buddies.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, our offices are in the – it's funny. Here's a funny story that nobody knows. Matt just moved his office. We've been doing some – they're just moving some people around in the office for whatever reason and doing some changes to the office. So Matt moved next to me, and we just put – a door. We built a door between the two offices, so now we can kind of open up the door, and we can just kind of talk to each other and see each other throughout the day. Even though the offices are already next to each other, we put a door up as well.
Now, when spring training hits in February, March, do you and Matt go down to Florida?
We've been fortunate enough to do it the last 2 years. The Phillies have invited us down, and we've called a couple of games for the Phillies during spring training. So that's been just tremendous. I mean, a dream come true, you know,
and
an opportunity
to chat
of a lifetime.
With the Phillies announcers,
yeah, exactly. We get to see the Phillies announcers, some of the Phillies front office staff, some of the players that we're familiar with. Spend time in Clearwater, which is such a beautiful town. The ballpark's great. You know, when I was 6 years old, I dreamed of doing something like that, and to actually do it it's hard to allow that type thing to sink in. But it's just been a blast.
That's a great opportunity.
I'm gonna have to have a talk with you, John. I've had the same dream, and here I am.
Here I am too.
See, there you go. One of the headlines that we've heard recently is a bit of a step down. Chuck Domino, the president of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, he's now a senior advisor, so he's still around. He's moved on to Richmond.
Spending some time with the team in Richmond that's trying to build a brand new ballpark.
Well, he had a lot to do with the success of Coca-Cola Park, which Rosalie and I saw go up from stick number one. You know, what are some of the things that he really has done to create what Coca-Cola Park is today, and what would you say his legacy might be?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's great to have him still with the club as a senior advisor, and I think that he stepped away from the president role because of how much he was able to accomplish here, and it almost felt as if that work was done, so to speak. The fans of the Iron Pigs have done the work for him. When you have 600,000 people come out every year, you know, it's time to move on to a project that demands more of his time. Everything that Chuck and with the people he's worked with, you know, Joe Finley, Craig Stein, the owners, Kurt Landis, the GM, who's been here since day one, what they touch just works. You know, they make good decisions. You know, they make team-minded decisions. They're thinking about the success of the organization when they make decisions. I think that's what Chuck would want to be. You know, when you talk about Chuck as the president of the Iron Pigs, he wants you to think about the fact that he was thinking about the fans when he made those decisions. They don't make decisions based on, you know, here's a way to make a dollar or here's a way to save a dollar. It's not part of the process, and that's very rare in the minor leagues. The amount of money that was spent in the offseason between one year and another is remarkable, like the addition of the seating area over the left field wall. Just all of the things that have gone on at Coca-Cola Park over the last 6 or 7 years, I think we are really blessed for it, because a lot of times you get a facility and then the facility kind of takes a downturn as the years pass. They will not allow that to happen. They spend a lot of money to make sure the facility is a world-class facility for the minor leagues, and that it will remain that way. That's not today in 2013. That's not 5 years in 2018. It's going to be an outstanding facility 20 years from today. And it's because of Chuck and Kurt and Joe and Craig that it'll be such a good facility.
John, what's the most exciting baseball moment for you when you're watching a game? There is a correct answer. I'll give that to you as soon as you give me your answer.
The most exciting moment for me when I watch a game as a fan?
That's right.
When I watch a game as a fan, I think what I enjoy most is probably my eyes are closed because I'm thinking about it.
I'm asking for a specific kind of play something that really is very emotional.
What's the most exciting possible play in a baseball game that's emotional? Well, I mean, are we talking about something like a no-hitter, or are we talking about like a triple play?
Yeah. Oh, a triple play is a good one.
Yeah.
That's a
great
one.
The best play in baseball, the most unique play in baseball is the triple play.
Right.
But what do you think?
Well, my answer is suicide squeeze.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And
yep.
You don't see it.
No.
I mean, it's very rare.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think because guys don't bunt anymore.
They don't bunt as much, and they don't steal bases as much. If you watch enough baseball, you'll see it all. You know, they still do it, and it happens. It does happen, but it's a different game, although I think the game's coming back to what it was, so to speak. So 2013, 2014 will look more like the 1980s than the 90s and 2000s. I think it's kind of like a bell curve where all the power in the offense is on the downturn, and we've seen that. I mean, look at how many no-hitters there have been. Look at the low-scoring games in baseball. And because of that, when run scoring becomes a premium, then bases are worth outs. When run scoring is not at a premium because you can score 9 times in a game, then a base is not worth an out. But when you're trying to score 1 run a game, then a base can be worth an out.
Exactly.
I've heard Matt, he's not too much in favor of sacrificing. No. I've heard Matt on the air.
Yeah, well, he grew up, an American League baseball fan in New York as a Yankees fan. And I grew up a National League baseball fan as a Phillies fan. And I believe in National League baseball. I like seeing the pitcher bat. I like bunting. I like strategy. I like double switches. Matt doesn't see it as much. Having watched as much minor league baseball as I have, I see the value of having 9 hitters in a lineup, especially from a developmental perspective, because these guys need to hit in the major leagues. But if a pitcher is playing, then he's playing. I mean, if you're on the mound, then you should bat. Everyone else that plays bats. So in my mind, while they might not be the best hitters in baseball, they should bat.
I agree. And yeah. Every once in a while, when the pitcher fools them and gets a
sure.
hit,
it's a big momentum-changing play.
It is so yep. exciting.
Yep.
Would you prefer to see a final score 7-5 or 2-1?
2-1.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you. Great pitching.
I'm gonna have yep. to take one more quick break. But before we do that, I know Rosalie, you're particularly interested in one aspect of what's coming in 19. And I keep on saying 19. This is the 21st
century.
2014. Right.
I'm particularly interested in what's coming. Yes, hopefully April 7th, the first home game of the Iron Pigs season 2014.
Mm-hmm. But you like. Some of the things that are handed out at the gates.
Oh, the giveaway. Of course. I can't wait till that gets announced. I'm always scouting the online to see what giveaways, and that's how I plan my schedule, of course.
Vacations and otherwise, right?
Yes.
When are those
coming out?
When does that come out usually?
Probably the first week of January. I'll tease it with this. Some of the best giveaways will be in the first 10 home games or so of the year.
That's usually when it's
the case.
With the chilliest
yep.
April, but I don't care. We go in winter garb, and we are there. People say, "You went to the baseball game?" Of course, we went to the baseball game. They had one, didn't they?
Yeah, and there'll be good giveaways early, including a couple bobbleheads.
Yes,
that's all I can say.
John's not talking.
That's all he's authorized to say, ladies and gentlemen.
I want to talk a little bit about the players that we might see next year, but first, please listen to this.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
We are back with the last segment of Lehigh Valley Discourse. Steve Aronson, John Pierce, John Schaefer, and Rosalie Viscomi with you this evening talking baseball. And in terms of 2014, we've heard some players' names mentioned as up and coming people. Michael Franco, an infielder, Jesse Biddle, a pitcher. What do you expect next year from those players or other players that might be joining the Iron Pigs at the beginning of the season?
Those are probably the two big names. Franco's year was unbelievable. between single A and double A, as good of a third baseman power prospect in baseball, which is saying a lot. I mean, he did take a little bit of a backseat to a Cody Ashe, but even with the year Ashe had, which finished up in the major leagues, Franco was the talk of baseball in 2013. Jesse Biddle is a local kid. He's a Philadelphia product, former first-round pick of the Phillies just a couple of years ago, that has really succeeded everywhere he's pitched, including last year in Reading. You know, the Phillies fans should be excited about the prospects they have in the organization, and Franco and Biddle are two of them. Reading didn't have a great year, but they had some really good individual years from guys, and those are probably two of the best. I'm excited to see both, and I would think that they both start the year with the Iron Pigs.
John, what is Coca-Cola Park used for, basically, during the off season?
There's a number of things. You know, we have a good indoor space upstairs, certainly on our club level, so there's a lot of events from trade shows to weddings to just parties, meetings, office space. We use it for a number of things.
How about a 25th wedding anniversary party? Would that be
next April? Well, yeah, absolutely.
All of our listeners are invited. All you have to do is call a station immediately.
Right, exactly.
And you will be invited. But
you better be careful what you say. You know, remember Orson Welles and War of the Worlds.
That's right.
We're liable to get the this switchboard looks like it's flooded, John.
What about Farmer Sally? Is she still around?
Absolutely. Yep.
So there's something for the children.
We have children's events once a month in our store.
It's on a Saturday morning.
On Saturday mornings, where they come out and have a storytelling event with Farmer Sally. We just had one probably in the last 2 weeks. We'll have another one at some point before Thanksgiving. There's a lot that goes on. I mean, again, the store is open 7 days a week. The stadium's open all off season. You know, people coming in for ticket plans and group outings, merchandise. It's a busy place. There's some days I show up and there's 1,000 cars in the parking lot. What's going on today?
Is there a game today?
Yeah, but we just had a color run last weekend. We have 5Ks. We've had huge food shows that take up the entire concourse.
You've had flu shots given there?
That's coming in November. There'll be flu shots, drive-through flu shots coming up.
Great use of the facility.
I hope I get a press release on that, because we'll do a public service announcement for it.
When it happens. We need to get that out. I'm not sure where that comes from or who's doing it, but there should be something coming soon.
Speaking about anything new coming to the Coca-Cola Park itself next year, we had one incredible activity this year, the urinal games. I was wondering if you had any data on that.
Well, I can tell you this. It got us as much publicity as probably the club has ever received, having those new games installed at Coca-Cola Park. And we had tens of thousands of usages, believe it or not. There were lines at points for people to use these urinal gaming systems. And you ask, will there be new things? And that's kind of what we're known for. There will be a number of new things. There'll be some really exciting off-season announcements. That's all I can say,
oh,
but you know, you guys know, Steve. You know, over the last 6 years, Iron Pigs baseball, we've had some big events, from the AAA All Star Game to the AAA National Championship Game, to different hospitality areas.
Willie Nelson
concerts.
Yeah,
we've had Bob Dylan. So the big things are coming. Okay, that's what I can tell you is when you see what's coming, there's some big announcements on the way.
We usually get something as season ticket holders. We usually get some of the advanced warning about things. And
no, we're not going to tell you on this one.
Okay,
John.
I'm on your distribution list for email. So
you'll get it via email once it's
okay.
We're at the end of October, and we've just completed the World Series on the major league level. That season just goes on too long. When are they going to get their act together at the major league level and play 144 games the way they do in the minors, have the last day of the season be Labor Day, and play your playoffs and everything in September? This is football season.
I think we're 100.
And about, hockey and basketball.
Exactly.
Well, we're about 130 days until pitchers and catchers. We may even be less than that, which is amazing. You're right. It's a short offseason, long season. I don't personally believe you'll ever see it shortened for a couple of reasons. One of them is TV revenue.
Exactly.
Two is records. You know, are you going to hit X amount of home runs when you go from 162 to 154 or 144? And not just TV revenue. What about in-park revenue? You know, hot dogs sold, beers sold, programs sold. to reverse the course of revenue streams when salaries go up is almost unthinkable. So when you say why 162, it's probably more financial than it is anything else, and it would be tough to turn the other way. Although I do think I'd like to see the World Series end in mid-October. If they could find a way, not necessarily shortening the schedule, but find a way, and they have. They've shortened it down the postseason. They've gotten rid of some of the off days. They have worked less around that to make sure it's over in October because other World Series have gone into November. But I'd like to see it end a week or 10 days earlier.
I also think it's ridiculous for the pro basketball players and hockey players to be playing in June. Mm-hmm. That's baseball season. It's all money.
Speaking of hockey, the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs have been for 6 years the only game in town in terms of upper level sports. But we're getting a hockey team next season. The Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Have the Iron Pigs and the Phantoms been working it all together? And
I need to tell you this first. Lindsay Knupp texted me. November 10th is the flu drive, and that is at Coca-Cola Park in the Dr. Pepper lot. But that is November 10th, which is a Sunday at Coca-Cola Park.
Instantaneous communication.
So, Lindsay, thank you.
Hi, Lindsay.
Thanks, Lindsay.
In terms of the Phantoms, we're excited. You know, I think it's great for the Lehigh Valley. I think the Iron Pigs are excited about it. More entertainment, more affordability options, you know, is better for the Lehigh Valley. You know, it's about a year away. The seasons don't really conflict with each other, so I think there's room for both of the organizations. And what I'd say is it's exciting. Me personally, I'm excited to have another professional sports organization in town. I think it's good for the Lehigh Valley. I think the arena is great for Allentown. I've spent the last 6 years living in Allentown. I'm excited. I think it's great.
Are they going to be called the Lehigh Valley Phantoms?
Yes.
Okay, so they're taking their cue from Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
It will help me get through the winter.
Yeah, exactly.
She's turned into a fanatic on sports.
Well,
Steve?
Hockey used to be my favorite sport, but I've turned to baseball, which...
Right, well, this will get you back to hockey, too.
On a personal note, hockey is actually how the two of us met. We met at Washington, through going to see the Washington Capitals.
At Landover? Landover?
Yes.
In the old Capitals.
I used to go with my dad, yeah.
Mm-hmm. John, how many different uniforms do the Iron Pigs have? Can you count
that? I think is infinity a
yeah, right.
a number. And not only do we have I'd say a handful, five that they wear full time, and then we'll auction off six or seven times a year for charitable organizations, another six or seven from tuxedo jersey tops we've worn to go green jersey tops.
Santa.
Halloween. We had a Halloween skeleton jersey top that we've worn. Yeah, Santa Claus. We've done a lot. We'll continue to do a lot with that, and it's good to kind of raise money with those organizations
right.
as well.
Well, a kid who goes out to the ballpark and to the a store and needs to have one of each of the jerseys. You're selling a bunch of jerseys that way.
Yeah, that's a $20,000 proposition.
Yeah,
if you want one of everything,
I have just one. I have the Saturday night because I like the red. Mm-hmm. I like the red jersey, and I wore it to school. We had Team Spirit last week, Team Spirit Day, so I wore that, and everybody said, wow, that's a really neat jersey. And I said, well, this is a Saturday night, and the teachers were like, what, Saturday night? What are you talking about? I said, oh, you don't know. You don't know their attire. I said, Sunday.
And the baby blues for Sunday.
Something for everyone. There's red, blue, black, whatever, something for everyone.
Well, Steve, thank you for joining me on co-hosting Lehigh Valley Discourse. Now, our time is just about up.
Thank you for letting me sit in your chair. And John Schaefer, is there anything we missed or anything?
I think we covered it. We're looking forward to pitchers and catchers and April 7th.
It's coming.
Now it's the offseason, but we're ready for
baseball. Be here before we know it.
Well, I want to thank John Schaefer for joining us on Lehigh Valley Discourse. We're looking forward to keeping up this relationship we have, beginning season, end of season, and do the recap and at the end and the forward look at the beginning. So thank you for joining us, John.
Thank you, Steve.
We're going to end the program this evening, as we usually do, with a little song sung by Terry Cashman, I Saw It on the Radio, in honor of John Schaefer and Matt Provence, the voices of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
Play by play on the radio. Play by play.
Back. He makes a one-handed catch against the bullpen. Oh, doctor.
Out on the porch in the summer heat, the
The sound of a southerner's voice filled the street. Me and the redhead were up in the catbird seat. And out in St. Louis it was surely the same. Holy cow, what a baseball game.
Thank you for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and HD. Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.